prayer. Do you have that voice in there? I mean, I'm talking, I guess, mainly to the old timers. Those of us who joined the Hare Krishna movement back in the 70s or 80s, 90s. That you are no good unless you do all those things that you know, that you have heard and read and heard spoken over and over again, and that you should know by now. Chanting the 16 rounds, following those regulative principles, going to the morning programs every day, not sleeping more than 7 hours. Getting up for Mangalart in the morning. Offering all your food. And serving Krishna. Serving Prabhupada's movement under the GBC, the authority authorized by Prabhupada, and serving your guru. Well, I don't know if you have that voice there inside you. You know, Freud spoke about this super self or whatever he called it, or was it the id? I don't even remember, but that voice in there, that is actually a conditioned voice, so to speak, a conditioning speaking to us. You know, like those things we learn from childhood, you know, from our parents, from society, and which simply becomes the truth and the reality and the world for us. The real world that we live in, you know, how we should live in it. So, I mean, I guess some of you may just immediately answer that, of course. I mean, why are you even questioning that? Why are you even making this program? Are you trying now to relativize and compromise and tell us that we don't need to do all this? Of course, we are, each one of us, free to do what we want to do, right? And that's, you know, to start with the last one there, following the guru, meaning just spending one's all, you know, every hour, every minute, every second, every day, serving the guru, whatever the guru wants us to do, we do, and that's all. And we only accept the words of our guru as our reality and as our truth. This kind of unconditional, total, 100% surrender to that person, the guru. Is that how it works? Is that how it should be? And of course, that is also the, could we say so, and you know, what makes cults into cults, that there is this person up there on top who is as good as God or Jesus, you know, or Krishna, or, and who is perfect, the enlightened one, chosen one. And if you doubt that, or show even some little weakness in your following, in your bright and vivid, constant showing yourself as a completely surrendered servant and follower of the guru, then you might get suspicion against you. You know, there is all this. If you've ever been in such a surrounding, you know what I mean. It's a groupthink thing. And yes, and sometimes, you know, it can turn vicious and bad also when followers of the guru start finding faults and, you know, with each other, and this follower is getting more respect and adoration than I am, and what he or she is doing, that thing wrong, is against the guru, and all these things. So, well, if that's where you live, and if that's where you want to live, then for God's sake, you know, continue. So if it makes you happy. But my understanding of guru, we could look in scriptures, you know, and I could prove what I'm saying is supported by Shastra and all that, but is that it's, you know, someone who is, acts and speaks in ways that I can really respect and, you know, agree with. And who knows this bhakti yoga, the philosophy there, and the Gita and the Bhagavatam, but, you know, also in general, because this is a universal. Could you say art of life or so? But I mean, it's universal knowledge, universal lifestyle, that we are all eternal servants, parts of God. And someone who knows that, not just in the mind, in the intellect, with some verses or something, but really lives that, and who therefore, you know, manifests those 20-something qualities of a Vaishnava, you know, all these. I mean, well, it's obvious, you know, titiksha, and also this titiksha karunika, mercy, tolerant, merciful, a friend of everyone, all, every living being. an enemy of no one. Peaceful. And so on. I mean, I think now I've started to paint a picture of a person who I think is to be respected as a guru. And then you get inspired by that person, by how that person acts and what that person says and so on, how that person is as a person, and you follow that example. To me, this is really what it is all about. And I have, today, sometimes I meet strict devotees, serious devotees, fixed up to, you know, all that kind, you know, is really doing everything you're supposed to do to the point. But some of those are, I feel uncomfortable around because I don't know. Sometimes it feels like it's not for real. It's a program I run here in my life. A schedule I follow, a set of rules and principles that I'm following. 1, 2, 3, 4, and that's who I am, and that's what life is. And therefore I'm a devotee, I'm a Vaishnava. But then there are others who are just living this way, that way, their own way out there in society, in the countryside or in the city or wherever. And are not following, you know, hardly any of those, all of those millions of principles. But who I can sit and talk with for hours, and who are, you know, who I consider friends, and who are, because they're for real. And it's funny because we were today, you know, this is like a few days after this cosmic event of the German, the U.S. election, that we are supposed to all go, wow. But there was this interesting thing, actually, that, well, I could mention it because it's interesting, and it is that the in CNN, the Democrats, or the people there, journalists, I guess, came out and said, you know, we agree, we confess, or we accept that we made a mistake, because they were trying to do all their propaganda, you know, and all that, informing the potential voters about how good they are, using our, this mainstream big media, you know, CNN and this and that. They had the Fox and got all those serious good, you know, wow. Big media. But Trump, he was sitting there with the Joe Rogans and, you know, the ordinary, having long talks with Elon Musk and, you know, all kinds of people, and just being a just a normal person. And then someone said, you know, this Kamala Harris, she, I think it was Elon Musk who said actually that if she would have gone sitting 3 hours with Joe Rogan, after 45 minutes, she would have been completely finished, completely stupid, because she doesn't have much to say. She's just doing those politician slogans, you know. The politicians, they learn this talk, you know, and they talk the talk and walk the walk, and they are politicians, and they are smiling, and they are getting the votes. That's their job. And, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And they hardly even know what they're going to do because they don't really do much often or change much. But, you know, so we all, at least I, am so fed up with those politicians. They appear so fake. And then you have this guy, whoever he is, Trump was just sitting there 3 hours with Joe Rogan and talking like an ordinary guy. Same thing, they're talking two, three hours with Elon Musk there. And I enjoyed listening to it, just as I enjoy any podcast. But, you know, as they said there, and I think it was CNN, that this is why he won the election. Because that's what people want, ordinary, real people. Not those who kind of, you know, play their role and, you know, act the way they should act in order to be professional politicians and, you know, authoritative and impressive and this and that, you know. This is how you should be. So I'm thinking it's the same with you know, people around me, that some are, you know, I appreciate, you know, devotees of God, devotees of Krishna. As Lord Chaitanya said, you just say the name of Krishna once and you're on your way back to God and you started your devotional life. So, and that's what it's about, isn't it? Not if I'm in the beginning or far down, you know, over there. That's not what it's about. It's about serving, you know, Krishna and enjoying that relationship here to God, to Krishna, and to devotees that we have around us. Or people in general. I mean, we are all ultimately devotees, so Surya Sarvadeenam. You're a friend of every living being. It's not that you just pretend to be the friend of all those dirty karmis and whatever in order to preach to them. But or to the less advanced devotees. But here you have, you know, the real friends, the advanced ones. The ones who are like me. Our little gang here. That's not what it says. So, and I know some devotees are like that. They're just the friends of everyone, you know. It's not that you make a differ between this one or that one so much. If someone behaves bad, of course, that's, you stay away from such people. And that is how we normally select who we hang out with, right? If we feel that this is a healthy relationship going on here, if it's abusive or, you know, toxic, or we feel no, then we generally don't, and I would say we shouldn't. Hang around in such relationship because it's destructive for us. But then, of course, I have this, you know, the guru is like a doctor, a surgeon sometimes has to cut, you know, that kind of thing. And sometimes this medicine is bitter. Yeah, of course, but that's still that we understand that. Yes, I got this kick in my face here, but I deserve it, it's right. I mean, yep, I'm learning from it. But if we feel that, why is this person doing that? There's nothing. Beneficial in this, I don't learn anything from it. It's like, then, you know. It ultimately comes down to us, deep, deep there within, with our free will and with our, you know, I would pray to Krishna for intelligence, you know, and that is Guru, really. God in our heart like that. And, well, that's what we call conscience. So we always have to listen to that conscience in there too. If a big, big spiritual leader behaves very bad, causing others pain, hurting others, even destroying the lives of others, then just stay away. And yes, of course, I mean, we shouldn't do only that which feels good, but you know what I mean. So, well, these were some thoughts I had about, not about the guru as such, but our responsibility, I would say, to ourselves and our integrity, our personal value. Because we are God, we are okay, we are allowed to accept ourselves as being okay. And then when that voice comes there, whether it is from our own, from our inside there, our conditioned lecturer, some conditioning is good, some is bad, you know, but whether it's that where it comes from for someone else by word or actions or just, you know, a look in the face, then I really think we should question that. And not let go of our own self, so to speak, or start fighting against ourselves. As I've heard devotees say that they do, and they understand this to be about. You know, I don't think Krishna's sitting there looking at us saying, I want you to do more for me. I need a lot of things. And if you don't do them, you know, those temple ceremonies and all of that and that, working, donating, and so on, up to that level, then I'm not satisfied with you, Arthur. And then I just reject you or forget about you or whatever, or punish. I mean, that's maybe how some people view God, but that's not how Krishna is. That's not how God, the real God, is. And I'm saying Krishna now because that's the best name I found of the same God who is there. And Islam and Christianity and so on, and Judaism. So again, that's what I'm looking at today. How I understand that it should also raise above those group differences, that kind of, I would say, superficial way of looking at what's going on here, and, you know, in terms of which easily happens when we are conditioned by this materialistic culture, civilization we are in, or whatever we should call it. And therefore we tend to think that that's where it's real. So if I just perform all those ritualistic functions and this and that and activities out there with my hands and, you know, body and mouth, then it's for real. Then God will be satisfied, because then it's substantial. You know, that's, I heard devotees speak like that, or at least have that attitude. So, but you know, I think it's easy to understand, right? If we just think about it this way, that Krishna, God, the all good who always loves us, it's okay. It's never. I mean, I guess we are angry at us if we treat others bad. Maybe, yeah, as a parent is. And maybe, you know, giving us a whack, some kind of lesson so we learn, hey, you don't behave like that. That's karma thing or other. But, you know, if we think of ourselves in that position as children to parents who are so good and kind and loving, in fact, it's a source of goodness and kindness and love, then it's not a matter for us to please and satisfy some God up there. Otherwise he will, you know, be dissatisfied with it. It's a matter of us remembering and reconnecting and looking back at that relationship. You know, just as with any friend. We're friends of family. All we want is, if we are normal and good-hearted, is to have nice relationships. And if a son or daughter takes off, moves to some other place and lives there, and you just want to stay in contact somewhere or other, and you long for them, and when they come back, you're happy. You're not angry because that person is, that child is over there doing their own thing. You want to help if they get in trouble or whatever. You may be worried, hey, what's going on here? But that's what it's all about, this Krishna conscious movement, to just help each and every one of us, all of us, each other. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. And that's not what I say, it's what Prabhupada says, it's what's said there, you know, Lord Chaitanya says. And Prabhupada says in several places that this is the principle regulation that includes all other principles and regulations. So, thank you, Hare Krishna.